Frost's poem continues with the famous words, his consideration, his searching of the two roads that diverged. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by. And that has made all the difference. Proverbs reveals to us two roads diverging in life. One is the pathway of wisdom, righteousness, and virtue. One is the pathway of foolishness. It's folly's way. It's the moron's way. It's the way of the simple-minded. It's the way of wickedness and pride and deceit, rebellion. It's the way of hard-heartedness and hard-headedness. Two roads. Proverbs asks of us the question, which will you travel? And oh, what a difference it will make for you and me, this choice of ours, no less than life and death at stake for us. Can I encourage you this morning? Choose wisely between these two diverging paths. Choose wisdom's way. Get wisdom and walk in it always. This morning, Proverbs chapter 14 and 15, man's wisdom first. From France, the French proverb, there is no pillow so soft as a clear conscience. That's a pretty good thought, isn't it? And probably very true. No pillow so soft as a clear conscience. It might not be a new mattress or pillow you need. It might be a cleaning and a clearing of your conscience instead. And the Amish are given credit for this. The man who claims to be the boss in his own home will lie about other things as well. So be careful, the man who makes such a claim. Proverbs chapter 14. The wise woman builds her house, but with her own hands, the foolish one tears hers down. He whose walk is upright fears the Lord, but he whose ways are devious despises him. A fool's talk brings a rod to his back, but the lips of the wise protect them. Where there is no oxen, the manger is empty, but from the strength of an ox comes an abundant harvest. A truthful witness does not deceive, but a false witness pours out lies. The mocker seeks wisdom and finds none, but knowledge comes easily to the discerning. Stay away from a foolish man, for you will not find knowledge on his lips. The wisdom of the prudent is to give thought to their ways, but the folly of fools is deception. Fools mock at making amends for sin, but goodwill is found among the upright. Each heart knows its own bitterness, and no one else can share its joy. The house of the wicked will be destroyed, but the tent of the upright will flourish. There is a way that seems right to a man, but in the end it leads to death. Even in laughter, the heart may ache, and joy may end in grief. The faithless will be fully repaid for their ways, and the good man rewarded for his. A simple man believes anything, but a prudent man gives thought to his steps. A wise man fears the Lord and shuns evil, but a fool is hot-headed and reckless. A quick-tempered man does foolish things, and a crafty man is hated. The simple inherit folly, but the prudent are crowned with knowledge. Evil men will bow down in the presence of the good, and the wicked at the gates of the righteous. The poor are shunned even by their neighbors, but the rich have many friends. He who despises his neighbor sins, but blessed is he who is kind to the needy. Do not those who plot evil go astray, but those who plan what is good find love and faithfulness. All hard work brings a profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty. The wealth of the wise is their crown, but the folly of fools yields folly. A truthful witness saves lives, but a false witness is deceitful. He who fears the Lord has a secure fortress, and for his children it will be a refuge. The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life, turning a man from the snares of death. A large population is a king's glory, but without subjects, a prince is ruined. A patient man has great understanding, but a quick-tempered man displays folly. A heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bones. He who oppresses the poor shows contempt for their maker, but whoever is kind to the needy honors God. When calamity comes, the wicked are brought down, but even in death, the righteous have a refuge. Wisdom reposes in the heart of the discerning, and even among fools, she lets herself be known. Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a disgrace to any people. A king delights in a wise servant, but a shameful servant incurs his wrath. Chapter 15. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. The tongue of the wise commends knowledge, but the mouth of the fool gushes folly. The eyes of the Lord are everywhere, keeping watch on the wicked and the good. The tongue that brings healing is a tree of life, but a deceitful tongue crushes the spirit. A fool spurns his father's discipline, but whoever heeds correction shows prudence. The house of the righteous contains great treasure, but the income of the wicked brings them trouble. The lips of the wise spread knowledge, not so the hearts of fools. The Lord detests the sacrifice of the wicked, but the prayer of the upright pleases him. The Lord detests the way of the wicked, but he loves those who pursue righteousness. Stern discipline awaits him who leaves the path. He who hates correction will die. Death and destruction lie open before the Lord. How much more the hearts of men? A mocker resents correction. He will not consult the wise. A happy heart makes the face cheerful, but heartache crushes the spirit. The discerning heart seeks knowledge, but the mouth of a fool feeds on folly. All the days of the oppressed are wretched, but the cheerful heart has a continual feast. Better a little with the fear of the Lord than great wealth with turmoil. Better a meal of vegetables where there is love than a fattened calf with hatred. A hot-tempered man stirs up dissension, but a patient man calms a quarrel. The way of the sluggard is blocked with thorns, but the path of the upright is a highway. A wise son brings joy to his father, but a foolish man despises his mother. Folly delights a man who lacks judgment, but a man of understanding keeps a straight course. Plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors they succeed. A man finds joy in giving an apt reply, and how good is a timely word. The path of life leads upward for the wise to keep him from going down to the grave. The Lord tears down the proud man's house, but he keeps the widow's boundaries intact. The Lord detests the thoughts of the wicked, but those of the pure are pleasing to him. A greedy man brings trouble to his family, but he who hates bribes will live. The heart of the righteous weighs its answers, but the mouth of the wicked gushes evil. The Lord is far from the wicked, but he hears the prayer of the righteous. A cheerful look brings joy to the heart, and good news gives health to the bones. He who listens to a life-giving rebuke will be at home among the wise. He who ignores discipline despises himself, but whoever heeds correction gains understanding. The fear of the Lord teaches a man wisdom, and humility comes before honor. A lot in Proverbs 14 and 15 for us. A lot in all of Proverbs, wisdom's word. For us this morning, a few thoughts. The first, once again, Proverbs' reminder of living life in the fear of the Lord. Can I encourage you this morning, and can I speak it to you by way of instruction? Fear the Lord. Dear brother, dear sister, fear the Lord. New life, fear the Lord. May we know more and better what it is to live in the fear of the Lord. In chapter 14 and verse 2, to fear the Lord is to walk uprightly. And this is good for us. Look at it in verse 26. It's a secure fortress for us and for our children. It's a good question to consider this morning. What kind of legacy do you hope to leave for your kids? Wisdom instructs us, encourages us. Leave a legacy of living in the fear of the Lord. If they don't know you as the wealthiest of dads or moms or grandparents, so be it. That doesn't matter. Even if they don't know you as the smartest of dads or moms or grandparents, so what? Because that doesn't matter as much as leaving for them a legacy of one who lives life in the fear of the Lord. That will be good for your children. And that will prove to be a true refuge, in fact, for them. In verse 27, the fear of the Lord is a fountain of life. It turns us away from sin. It saves us from the snares of death. Came across this last week. Snares of death surround and beset our path. Some arise from the world, some from Satan, some from the people of God, but far, far most from ourselves. All around you, snares have been set. The devil, the world, other people, mostly even you. The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life which detects and manifests these hidden snares. And by its bubbling up as a living spring in the heart, it brings the soul into the presence of God. And thus strength, wisdom, and grace are communicated to flee them before falling into them or deliver our feet out of them when unhappily entangled. The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life. Verse 33 of chapter 15, the fear of the Lord teaches us and grants us wisdom. It is, in fact, the beginning of wisdom. The fear of the Lord is where life, where true life, where abundant life is lived. It is good for us. In fact, it is the best for us. In verse 16 of chapter 15, better a little with the fear of the Lord than a lot without that fear. The Message puts it this way: a simple life in the fear of God is better than a rich life with a ton of headaches. Wisdom's word today: the fear of the Lord is what you need. The fear of the Lord is what you want. Get that. Get more of that. Live more and better in that. Also, once more in Proverbs 14 and 15, wisdom's instruction, wisdom's guidance in how you talk. Can I again speak it to you by way of word of instruction? Wisdom's word, wisdom's call. Use control and restraint in the things that you say. Verse 3 of chapter 14, to do otherwise will hurt you. The fool's talk hurts him. You know, it's interesting because we so often talk about how our words can hurt others. That's true. Don't misunderstand that. That would be the clear message even here again in Proverbs chapter 14 and Proverbs 15. But what I wonder if sometimes we miss is this. Verse 3, a fool's talk brings a rod to his back. When you don't know how to talk right, not only will you leave a wake of destruction in your path because of casual and flippant and careless words that you spoke, but what you will find, you will bring ruin to your own life, destruction to yourself. Use control and restraint in the things that you say. The lips of the wise, the lips of the one who uses control and restraint, that will protect them. James chapter 3, James writes this: when we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or take ships as an example. Although they're so large and driven by strong winds, they're steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole person, sets the whole course of his life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, creatures of the sea are being tamed and have been tamed by man. But no man can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison. With the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth, praise and cursing, my brothers, this should not be. Wisdom is clear. James is clear. The utmost care must be taken in how we talk. In fact, according to James chapter 3, maybe we shouldn't talk at all. Maybe we should take from James 3 the simplicity of this lesson: talk less. That tongue is a raging fire, corrupts the whole body, filled with poison. Be careful how much you use it then. Proverbs 14 and verse 5 and 25 even as well. Wisdom demands that your talk is true. In verse 1 of chapter 14, the wise woman builds her house, but with her own hands, the foolish one tears hers down. Wisdom is constructive. Foolish is destructive. Wisdom then demands that your talk be constructive, not destructive. In chapter 15 and verse 1, a very famous proverb, we've probably known it well already. Wisdom demands from you the gentle answer, the soft word. On July 28, 1914, Austria-Hungary declared war on Serbia in response to the assassination of Archduke Francis Ferdinand and his wife Sophie. Within 90 days, other European countries had taken sides to honor their military alliances and pursue their own ambitions. A single event escalated into World War I, one of the most destructive military conflicts of modern time. The tragedy of war is staggering, yet our relationships and families can begin to fracture with only a few hateful words. A small comment can start a large fight. Be careful. With your tongue, you can start world war, whatever you're on, in your marriage, in your family. With that tongue, you can start world war, whatever you're on, in your workplace, amongst your friends. Listen to me, New Life, lest we think we're above the potential of world war, whatever, being started right here among us because of the casual and the flippant and the careless words spoken. One writes this: we live in an age of rage. Doesn't that seem to be true? Think of that for a moment. Don't people seem to be angrier today, more easily angered? Isn't it true? I know it's a little bit maybe our social media culture and the media outlets that jump on stories like this, but think of it. 20 years ago, how many times did you hear of somebody getting arrested because at McDonald's they put pickles on their hamburger when they ask for no pickles? And yet there's a good chance you could go and Google it right now when you get home and you would find a fight started here. Massive brawl breaks out in McDonald's because they didn't get the hamburger that they ordered. How many times do we hear of road rage in our day where people are literally dying, lives threatened because of another's anger? But the author says, we can help solve the problem one person at a time. When we're on the receiving end of someone's wrath, someone's rage, Proverbs 15 and verse 1, we can return a soft answer. A calm, reasoned approach can stop anger in its tracks. You want to know how to stop anger? Speak the gentle word. Speak the soft word. The gentle, the soft, it's hard, but the gentle and the soft is what wisdom demands of us. One writes this: I vow to soften. By being softer, You can hear more, learn more, feel more, and love more. I've had enough of my hard edges. I'm tired of straining my voice. I'd like to loosen up and laugh a little more, be positive rather than negative. I'd like to feel the upward curve of my lips. I'd like to surrender control of things over which I have no control. I'd like to let things unfold in their own time, in their own way. I'd like to participate joyfully in this fleeting life. I'd like to be softer toward him, toward her, toward myself. Thus, this will be the year of my softening. And this is my vow. I vow to listen to opinions. I don't always have to be right. I don't always have to agree or have the last word. I vow to hand over the hairbrush, the pile of laundry, the school project, the task before me. How would you do it? I will ask. I vow to step aside and respect a new approach. Success might be difficult to see at first. I vow to keep looking. I vow to be more accepting of quirks and mannerisms. I vow to be more accepting of taste and styles unlike my own. I vow to remember he's in the process of becoming. She's in the process of finding her way, and they are more apt to do it if I stop telling them how. I vow to regard weakness as hidden strength. Inner gifts can be nurtured when I stop plotting ways to alter, change, and improve. I vow to greet my family, myself, with a loving smile, no matter what happened yesterday. Grudge holding only hurts us all. I vow to pause before correcting. I will take a moment to consider if the mistake even needs to be mentioned at all. I vow to stop nitpicking. I vow to demand less and inquire more. I vow to listen, consider, and expand my thinking. I vow to be a voice of encouragement in a demeaning world. I vow to be a silver lining spotter in my family's little world. I vow to be softer today than I was yesterday. A softer voice, a softer posture, a softer touch, a softer thought, a softer timetable. I vow to be softer toward the imperfect human being inside me and the one beside me. By being softer, I can hear more, learn more, feel more, love more. At last, I will fully see. I will see his colors. I will see her colors. I will see my colors, perhaps for the very first time. The colors might take my breath away, bring me to tears, or offer long-awaited peace. I will soften in order to illuminate the colors of the soul. I will soften so the human being within me and beside me can shine. I vow to soften. You do the same. Wisdom. Word, you need to make sure that your words are the soft and the gentle kind. Verse 4 of chapter 15, wisdom demands from you healing words. Verse 18, wisdom demands from you patience, and that in turn then your talk reflects the virtue of patience. Verse 23, wisdom demands from you the timely word. Verse 28, the carefully considered word. One poet writes, a careless word may kindle strife. A cruel word may wreck a life. A timely word may lessen stress. A loving word may heal and bless. Show restraint. Be careful in your words. Be careful with your words. May yours only be the kind that lessen the stress and heal and bless. Show restraint. Be careful. As one author puts it, bite your tongue before your tongue bites others. Ephesians chapter 4, Paul says it this way, watch the way you talk. Let nothing foul or dirty come out of your mouth. Say only what helps, each word a gift. And Jesus lets us to know the reason for constantly evaluating what we're saying and how we're talking. In Luke chapter 6, the good man brings good things out of the good stored up in his heart, and the evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in his. For out of the overflow of his heart, his mouth speaks. If you speak hatred, it's because there's hatred in your heart. By the way, you can go to Matthew's gospel, and Jesus says, there's hatred in your heart, you're guilty of murder. You're a murderer if you hate your brother. This morning, I want to encourage you the importance of how we talk because it reflects what's in our heart. Proverbs tells us earlier, above all else, guard what? Guard your heart. Your mouth is an indication of what's in your heart. You may think you're good to go this morning. Your heart might prove otherwise. How do you know? What comes out of your mouth will tell you what's in your heart and let you to know whether, in fact, all is okay in there. You need to check this morning how you're talking. Speak the truth. Build up, don't tear down. Speak the soft and the gentle. Speak the healing and the timely. And on to mom's proverbs, mom's words of wisdom. If you can't do that, come on, you know it. Then don't say anything at all. Carefully consider your words. Use restraint. Next in verse 4, an odd sort of proverb. Look at it again. Where there's no oxen, the manger's empty, but from the strength of an ox comes an abundant harvest. So it caught my eye and caught my attention. There's probably other thoughts. In fact, you maybe would read commentaries. And again, this one, we saw it last week, how the wise are kind even to their animals in a sense there to make sure that you take good care of the animal that's providing for you and for helping you. But also there's a picture here, and I put it in your notes this way. Easier is not always better. Easier is not always better. It's easier to not have oxen. The manger stays empty rather than messy. But look at it. Without the oxen, there's no harvest. Something in life may be hard, maybe messy. And you think it's easier not to have that, not to worry about that. But listen to me, the harvest is at stake. Don't get trapped nor deceived by the easy. I think of it as it relates to the church. A new ministry, that's oxen in the manger. Hard, difficult. What are we going to do? How are we going to make it work? It's going to cost us. You mean, pastor, to tell me we're going to help out, we're going to have to volunteer, we don't just get to show up on Sunday for an hour and a half? You mean you need us here Saturday and work day on Thursday night? You're telling me we're going to have to do all of that? We're going to have to be producers, not just consumers? No way. It's too hard. Let's not invest in the oxen. Let's keep the manger nice and clean. But the harvest is at stake. New people, brand new believers. That's oxen in the manger. That disrupts this nice little thing we've got going here. Pastor, let's keep the manger clean. Let's not have any oxen. Let's keep it us few and no more. But the harvest, the eternity of men and women at stake. Listen, new life, if we ever go the easy route, I'm just going to tell you this morning, if you like church easy, your only part to show up and be ministered to, if you like church easy, no oxen in the manger for you, for us, I'm just going to say it to you this way. Well, in fact, that's not really church. What we have is a community gathering. We have a group. We have a clique. We have our own little social network that we happen to call a church. We are to be concerned. Everything about us needs to be about the harvest. Must be about the harvest. If we're choosing anything above that, if we're choosing the clean and the easy above that, listen to me. We're choosing wrong. We're doing wrong. If you think it better that every remaining seat that you see here in this room this morning, if you think it better that those seats not be filled by 18 to 25 year olds because that would just mess up our church family dynamic, I'm telling you this morning, you don't understand church. If you think it's better that these pews and these seats that you see empty are not filled by the drug addict, the drunk, the prostitute, the homeless, then I'm going to tell you this morning, you don't understand church, nor do you in fact understand God's kingdom. It's better, no matter the cost, no matter the mess, no matter how hard it gets, we go to get the harvest. We exist to glorify God and to advance His kingdom. That means to go out into the harvest field and get to work. No matter what it takes, always choose the harvest. Never settle for the easy. Proverbs 14 and verse 7, stay away from the foolish man. We talked earlier of our words. Give careful consideration to the words you speak. Now here in verse 7, give careful consideration to the company you keep. The Message puts it this way. Escape quickly from the company of fools. They're a waste of your time. They're a waste of your words. Stay away from the foolish man. Stay away from the foolish woman. Stay away from the foolish thing. By the way, could I add here, don't be the foolish man or woman that others need to avoid. Right? Verse 8, the wisdom of the prudent give thoughts to their ways. The hot-headed and reckless, the foolish. Don't be hot-headed and reckless. Give thought. Give careful thought to your ways. Careful consideration to the steps you take and the decisions that you make. The Oxford English Dictionary defines prudence this way: the ability to recognize and to follow the most suitable and sensible course of action. To have prudence then is to give careful consideration and careful thought to your ways, to recognize, to follow them. What's the most suitable and what's the most sensible? Again, in verse 16, the fool, the hot-headed and the reckless, like a bull in a china shop, they're just going to go until they're lost on the pathway of destruction. And all of a sudden, they're waking up. Whoa, what happened? How did I get here? Well, you got here because back there, you were hot-headed and reckless. You played the part of a fool. And rather than consider your ways and give careful thought to them, rather than live in prudence, you acted hastily, foolishly. Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 9, fools mock at making amends for sin. One translation says it this way: foolish people don't care if they sin, but good people want to be forgiven. Good people want to make things right. Good people want to be forgiven, so they make things right. They make sure things are right. Listen to this story. John Thomas believed the man on trial was innocent, but he couldn't convince his fellow jurors to agree. After 8 hours of deliberation, he gave in and voted with the majority. But after the guilty verdict was rendered, he couldn't stop thinking that he had helped to convict an innocent man. So what does Mr. Thomas do? He spent his own money to hire an attorney to appeal the case. A few days into the proceedings, sure enough, the alleged victim admitted he had lied and the convicted man was set free. I was a juror and I helped make a wrong, Mr. Thomas said. It had to be righted. The wise live. It has to be made right. I said the wrong thing. I have to be forgiven of that. I have to go and make it right with that person. I did the wrong thing. I reacted foolishly. I reacted in anger. I reacted with the harsh word. It's just not bygones be bygones. I have to go and seek their forgiveness. I have to go and make it right. One says it this way: we commit two wrongs when we fail to right a wrong. Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 11, 19. Proverbs 15, 6 and 8, 9. Again, wisdom's word. Wisdom, foolishness relate to righteousness. and wickedness. Look at it in verse 11 of chapter 14. The house of the wicked destroyed, but the upright flourish. In verse 22, those who plot evil go astray, but the good find love and faithfulness. When calamity comes, verse 32, the wicked are brought down, but even in death, the righteous have a refuge. Righteousness does what? Exalts a nation in verse 34, but sin is a disgrace. Came across the story of the Great Wall of China. The author said this: we think we can build a nation on the gross national product or defend it with armaments, but God says that countries are built on the character of the people. The people of ancient China sought security from the barbaric hordes that swept down from the north, so they erected the Great Wall. The massive wall stretched for 1,500 miles, 12 to 40 feet wide, 20 to 50 feet high. The wall was too high for enemy to scale, too thick to tear down, and too strong to go around. Yet during the first 100 years of the wall's existence, China was invaded 3 times. How was the security breached? The enemy simply bribed the gatekeeper and then marched right through the gate. The fatal flaw in China's defense lay in spending its wealth to build a wall, but paying much less to build the character of the gatekeepers. A bigger defense system won't ultimately protect our nation, but we can contribute to her security by being blameless and harmless, without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation. Can I say it this way for us, New Life? Be good for Flushing. Be righteous. Live righteously. New Life, brothers and sisters, church in America, be good for America. How so? Be righteous. Live righteously. That's where a city, that's where a nation's exaltation is found. Verse 8, the Lord detests the sacrifice of the wicked, but the upright please him. Verse 9 of chapter 15, the Lord detests the way of the wicked. In verse 26, he detests the thoughts of the wicked. In verse 29, he's far from the wicked, but he hears the prayer of the righteous. Those that are pure are pleasing to him, and he loves those who pursue righteousness. Wisdom's word: the Lord delights in the righteous and in the wise. The Lord delights in the righteous and in the wise. May the Lord delight in you. And may the Lord delight in me and in us. Quite the contrast that's presented. Some very strong language here. The Lord detests the sacrifice of the wicked. What you bring to the Lord, what you do for the Lord, is no good if you're not living right before the Lord. What you bring doesn't count if you're not living righteously before him. The Lord loves those who pursue him. He listens to their prayer. He delights in their prayer. One says it this way: we too seldom consider the pleasure that the prayer of his people gives to God. God delights in our prayers. Verse 12 of chapter 14. We'll just do a few more this morning. Choose God's path. There's a way that seems right, but in the end it leads to death. That's not God's path. God's path leads to life. So choose God's path. Don't leave his path. Stay on his path. Stay with God. Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 10. One translation says it this way: it's a school of hard knocks for those who leave God's path, a dead end street for those who hate God's rules. Never mind your way. Never mind what seems right to you or the culture in which you live. Never mind that. Choose him. Choose God. Choose his life-giving path. It's also wisdom's word related to advice and good counsel. Choose God's path and be ready to listen to the counsel of others. Who is so wise as to have perfect knowledge of all things? None of us, right? Therefore, trust not too much to your own opinion, but be ready to hear the opinions of others. Listen to this. In order to determine God's course for life, the wise person should open up to several avenues of counsel through which God can bring guiding wisdom. When a person seeks the wise counsel of others, he shows his realization that he might be overlooking some important factors in his decision. Part of recognizing God's direction, part of recognizing God's guidance and leading in our lives, is to tune our ears, not just in what he's saying through Bible reading and prayer, but to tune our ears to what others might be speaking to us of God's wisdom. Verse 13, even in laughter, the heart may ache and joy may end in grief. I included this. It just caught my attention. It's true. We know what it is to live with an aching heart. The heart may ache, wisdom's word, but there's joy to come, and there's joy to know here and now. Even in laughter, the heart aches. How many times have we experienced that? Maybe in the context of family. It's a Christmas celebration. What is there? There's laughter. There's joy. But what can happen? The heart can ache as you reflect on who's not there. Who's not there this year? Who's not there this time? Maybe because of a loved one who's passed away, maybe because of a brokenness in relationship. And even in the midst of the laughter and the joy, there can be a little bit of an aching heart that you experience. I was reminded as I thought of this, the great song, but there's coming a day. When no heartaches shall come, no more clouds in the sky, no more tears to dim the eye. All is peace forevermore on that happy golden shore. You know it. Oh, what a day. What a glorious day that will be. The heart may ache. It will not always. Revelation 21, I heard a voice from the throne. Look, God's moved into the neighborhood, making his home with men and women. They're his people. He's their God. He'll wipe away every tear from their eye. Death gone for good. Tears gone. Crying gone. Pain gone. Proverbs 15, 13 and 30 also reminds us it's joy that we can know now. Even in the midst of the heartache, there's a joy that God gives. Let me quickly, verse 13. I want you to see this. Verse 13 and 30 of Proverbs 15. I want you to see the change. It's a flip. Look at it in verse 13. A happy heart makes the face cheerful. If there's happiness in your heart, you show it. Right? But look at it in verse 30. A cheerful look brings joy to the heart. The starting point changes, doesn't it? Happiness in your heart first, happiness to your face. But then it changes, and now happiness in your face brings happiness to your heart. Wisdom's word this morning. Learn to put a smile on your face so that joy will come. Some of you, all due respect, you look too grumpy. You need to smile more. Pastor, I've got nothing to smile about. No, you've got it wrong. See, you're not understanding Proverbs. Put a smile on your face and the joy will come to your heart. And notice it's sort of this circular, never-ending thing. What happens? You put a smile on your face, joy comes to your heart. But what does joy in your heart do? Joy in your heart puts a smile on your face. But what does a smile on your face do? Puts joy in your heart. Do you see? It's a never-ending thing. And notice as well, it's something not determined by your circumstances. It's you. Decision-making time, wisdom's word. Put a smile on your face. But the trouble, but the difficulty. Oh, but wisdom doesn't say that the trouble or the difficulty will compromise your ability to put a smile on your face. Or from the smile on your face to put joy in your heart. And from the joy in your heart to put a smile on your face. On and on and on. Simply put, this world's not our home. The heartache, it won't be like this forever. Nevertheless, don't forget the joy, the cheer you can know right now. Live in it, speak of it, let your face show that you have it. If you're smart, if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands, stomp your feet, do all the above. Don't let your circumstances compromise it. One more thing, look at in verse 30. It's good news that brings health to your bones. Be careful. Don't surround yourself with people who don't know how to speak good news to you. Only know complaint and negativity. They are harmful for the well-being of your soul. Be careful what you listen to. Be careful what you watch. The constant bad news will make you sick inside. But the good news, the message puts it this way. A twinkle in the eye means joy in the heart. And good news makes you feel fit as a fiddle. Some of us maybe need to hear some more good news to change what's happening inside of us. Verse 17, be patient instead of quick-tempered. Slowness to anger makes for deep understanding. A quick-tempered person stockpiles stupidity. So says the message, Proverbs 14, 29. Don't stockpile stupidity. Be patient instead of quick-tempered. Verse 21, honor God. Be kind to the needy. Wisdom's word. You have to be careful the attitude you take toward the widowed, the orphaned, the poor. You need to be an advocate for the widowed, the orphaned, the poor. You need to be kind. You need to help. You need to work to the benefit of the widowed, the poor, the orphaned. You honor God when you do. Over 9 to 15 million people every year die from hunger. That's 25 to 40,000 people that will die today because of hunger. Approximately 3.1 million children die from undernutrition every year. 66 million primary school age children will attend class every day hungry throughout the developing world. The need is great. Ephesians chapter 4 from the Living Bible, Paul writes, if anyone's stealing, he has to stop it and begin using those hands of his for honest work so he can have another car, so he can have more square footage added to his home, so he can have more stuff which will bring more happiness in life. No, 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 and no. He must use those hands of his for honest work. Why? So he can give to others in need. James 1, religion that God accepts as pure and without fault is this, caring for orphans or widows who need help and keeping yourself free from the world's influence. In Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 30, beware of envy. It rots the bones. Never take envy lightly. One author says this, when you turn green with envy, you are ripe for trouble. Beware of envy. Don't discount. I imagine most of us, of all the sins that I could fall prey to. Well, envy certainly isn't the worst. Hear wisdom's word. You see it in verse 30. Envy rocks you from the inside out. Beware of envy. Proverbs 15 and verse 6. The house of the righteous contains great treasure. If you look through Proverbs 14 and 15, you see why. Because the house of the righteous is built on the fear of the Lord. Because wisdom builds the house of the righteous, doesn't tear it down. It's the fountain of life that's there that saves from the snares of death. In verse 17 of chapter 15, in wisdom's house, in the house of righteous, love is established. And that's the best thing. Better than a full table. Better than a big TV. Better than a lot of toys in the home is the simplicity of love that rules there. Righteousness, wisdom, make sure that it does. It creates a home, verse 20, where children can be proud of their parents and follow their wise instruction, and where children can bring joy to their father and mother. It protects the home from greed, which brings trouble, and establishes a home built on generosity. Listen to me this morning. If there's love in your home, righteousness, the standard, the fear of the Lord being taught, wise instruction being given, children bringing joy to their dad and mom, priority to giving above getting. Listen to me. Your home then is filled with treasure. Well, Pastor, you should see my bank account. Now, I don't need to see it. Because if you have these things there, You are rich beyond measure and have reason to be grateful without end. In verse 14, the discerning heart seeks knowledge, but the mouth of the fool feeds on folly. Be careful what you feed on. Wisdom asks you this morning, wherein do your appetites lie? The wisdom, the folly. Wisdom asks us this morning, what are you feeding your spirit? What are you feeding your soul, your mind, your heart? Wisdom's word, always and only feed on wisdom and wisdom's things. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood. One, the fool's way, wicked, destructive, filled with envy, deception, and dishonesty. It's the way of the reckless, the proud, the arrogant, the unrepentant, the self-centered. This is the pathway of those who would oppress the poor, caring nothing for anyone except themselves, even in fact despising the Lord himself. This is the way of broken relationships, harsh, impulsive, hot-headed thinking, acting, and talking. This is the way of the quarrelsome and the reckless. Two roads diverge. The other is wisdom's way. It's the way of virtue, the way of prudence. This is the way of this constructive and the content. This is the way defined by the fear of the Lord. Here the tongue is controlled. The truth is spoken. The healing words given. Here on this path is the careful consideration before acting, before reacting, before speaking, before choosing your friends and your company through life's journey. This is the pathway of discernment and hard work and patience. And it's marked by a care for the future and a care for the poor. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, one leading to death. It's the pathway that leads straight to hell, the other to life. Two roads diverge, and I, oh, dear brother, dear sister, today, may we choose to take the wisdom one. For without a doubt, for sure it will make all the difference to us. Father, this morning, we ask you again for wisdom. Give to us wisdom, Lord, we pray.